Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano. We're kicking off Hall of Fame weekend here by looking back at some of the greatest moments and memories for the Hall of Fame class of 2021. They're getting ready to be inducted on Saturday night. And we'll take you through the incredible journey of one of those Hall of Famers, Ben Wallace, how he went from Alabama to undrafted to NBA champion. Meanwhile, the Nets and Lakers continue to make moves on their quest for a Larry O'Brien trophy. We'll dive into who constructed their roster better. Plus, we've got more overs and unders. Win totals for the Knicks. Will they even finish above 500? Oh, good Lord, I can see the tweets already. Watch responsibly. The Jump starts now. Hey, what's up? It's Friday, and I'm joined by a pair of multi-talented folks. Brian Windhorst, New York Times bestseller and host of the Hoop Collective podcast, as well as ESPN host, hoop streamer, reporter, and much, much more, Cassidy Hubbard. All right, we'll start with some breaking news here from Woj. The Lakers are trading Marc Gasol to the Grizzlies in a move that'll save $10 million. And according to Woj, the Grizzlies are expected to waive Gasol so he can just stay in Spain. So, Windy, what's your reaction to all this?
Well, you know, I talked to Marc Gasol after the Americans beat the Spanish in the Tokyo Olympics and asked him, hey, listen, are you still planning on coming back and playing this last year with the Lakers? And he said at that time he was planning on it, but I wasn't 100% sure of it. And so now we have the answer. And this was made a little bit more clear when DeAndre Jordan signed with the Lakers this week, because we're expecting Anthony Davis to play significant minutes at center this year. They also brought back Dwight Howard. And so the Lakers just had four centers on their roster, and it just didn't make sense. And if Gasol indeed wanted to maybe play in Spain and finish his NBA career, this way he can get his money and it not be an issue. I have to say, though, it is remarkable the amount of business that the Lakers do with the Grizzlies. Not only trading for Pau Gasol back in the day, but they've had four players that the Grizzlies have released in the last few years, then signed with the Lakers, including this year. The Grizzlies are paying Rajon Rondo's salary while the Lakers are paying less of it. And now here they have this trade, which they did send him a second-round draft pick and some cash to cover some of his salary. But this gives them a roster spot and saves them about $10 million in luxury tax. So Lakers fans should really like the Grizzlies. They're helping them out all over the place.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, they have now two open roster spots. And as you mentioned, Brian, like the DeAndre Jordan move makes a little more sense now. And as Woj, you know, pointed out, this move means most likely that we're going to be summing up Marc Gasol's career in the NBA. And if that's the case, it was a hell of a career. He played a beautiful style of basketball. His defense at his peak was elite. You know, I know last year came like a lot of frustrations for him, but I guess it comes full circle for him to be traded from the Lakers to Memphis. And feels right that he retires as a Grizzly.
Yeah, Cass, I don't think there's any question about that. And ultimately, look, you kind of alluded to it, where it wasn't always great last year. There weren't a lot of combinations of lineups, guys, that you could put out there with Marc Gasol that had real good returns. And I was completely wrong on that. Like, I thought, oh, from the high post, he's going to be fantastic finding guys, cutting this, that, and the other. It just never really materialized like it did when he went to Toronto, right? I just assumed that it would be very similar to that particular episode of his career. Didn't work out. DeAndre Jordan probably more in line with the way the Lakers want to play with their centers. If you look specifically when they won the championship with JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, he fits there. He's a great role man, and he can finish at the rim still and can protect the rim better than Mark can at this stage. But you nailed it, Cass. He gets to finish in Memphis. He gets that ceremonial retirement from Memphis. And Brian, do you think that's what happens? Do you think he just finishes off his career in Spain? Like, he will play there one more year, perhaps?
Yeah, I think there's a possibility he's going to play in Spain, possibly with Pau, who played in Spain last year, although it might be over for Pau as well. I have to say, in 2019, he had an absolutely amazing year. He went to the Raptors with that midseason trade and won the title as a key member of that Raptors team, and then went over to the World Cup in China and led Spain to the World Cup title all in the same summer. And it took a lot out of him. And I'm not so sure he was really the same player after that. He really gassed himself that summer. He just didn't have a lot left in the tank. And so I think it's a responsible decision by him, because he's still going to get paid. Basically, the Lakers sort of guaranteed him $5 million to come to them last year. They, he had other options, and so this is sort of them paying off the back end of it. So he'll get a, you know, he'll get a last paycheck, which will have Grizzlies written on it. And but I do still think, you know, he's still got some run with the Spanish national team. But in that last game, he didn't even score against the Americans in their biggest game.
Yeah.
He didn't even score. So you could tell that his time as a significant player came to an end. But he's one of the great defensive centers of that era. He won Defensive Player of the Year, was an all-star, obviously a terrific career, and leaves with a World Cup gold medal and an NBA ring. What else can you ask for?
Yeah, one of the great careers.
One thing.
Yeah.
George, one thing, and maybe Schwartzy can look this up for us. I'm seeing that he's 49 points behind Mike Conley for being the franchise's leading scorer. So I don't know. Do you give him two games so he can become the franchise's leading scorer? I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, Cass, I don't know if he needs just four games to get that at this stage, or two games at this stage of his career. I don't know if that could materialize. But certainly, if it is a career for Marc Gasol, a fantastic one for sure. One of the great careers of any second-round pick, if you think about it, in the history of the sport. He's certainly up there. All right, speaking of greatest in the sport's history, the 2021 Basketball Hall of Fame induction is tomorrow. Featuring Chris Bosh, Paul Pierce, Ben Wallace, and Chris Webber, Bill Russell will also become the fifth player to be inducted as a player and a coach, as well as 11 other people inducted, which includes Coach Rick Adelman, WNBA legends Lauren Jackson and Yolanda Griffith, Villanova coach Jay Wright, and former Bull and Croatian sensation Tony Kukoc, who played with Jordan and Pippen with the Chicago Bulls. So, Brian, when you look at this class as a whole, what's your biggest takeaway?
Well, we're now getting, this is my 19th year covering the NBA, and we're now getting into guys going to the Hall of Fame that I covered their entire careers. And I was there for so many of Chris Bosh's key moments of his career. I was there for all the battles that Paul Pierce had against LeBron James, which was, you know, some of the defining moments in his career, both highs and lows. Ben Wallace, I covered so many Ben Wallace playoff games, and then I covered Ben Wallace when he was a Cavalier near the end of his career. You know, I have personal relationships with these guys. It's a really, on a personal level, a special class. And, you know, these are guys who, in some ways, were overshadowed. You know, last year's class, even though it was inducted earlier this year, was such a star-studded class. And these guys kind of played in the shadow of some of those guys, and it wasn't always fair. You know, Paul Pierce was absolutely, you know, one of the best players of his era. Chris Bosh helped redefine the center position in the NBA. Ben Wallace was one of the great defensive centers that of the last 30 years. Totally intimidated other players despite being undersized. And then Chris Webber obviously had a long and decorated career. But those three, especially, to all, you know, really, you know, they're champions, you know, and were big parts of championship teams. And especially, you know, Chris Bosh, who I think is an underrated player, even if you can go into the Hall of Fame as an underrated player, I'm glad that he's getting his flowers in this special weekend.
So, Cass, out of everyone who's slated to speak tomorrow night, who are you most excited to hear from?
Well, look, I'm looking forward to hearing Paul Pierce's speech because, well, he's Paul. We all know him well. His speech should be epic. The Fab Five reunion for Chris Webber, I think, will be a special moment. But the little girl in me is most excited to see Tony Kukoc, who is selected by the International Committee. You know, that second Bulls three-peat shaped me as a sports fan, and I love hearing the stories about him and Michael Jordan's relationship in retirement. And MJ adding to his list of Hall of Fame appearances this year, fresh off attending Derek Jeter's this past week, and then he presented Kobe Bryant and Kim Mulkey, obviously in the Hall of Fame in May. He's gone, guys, from staying out of the spotlight in retirement to being out and among the people, and I am here for it. You know, I think really, you know, him coming out and showing his vulnerability, obviously during Kobe Bryant's funeral there, we've more and more have seen him and The Last Dance as well, open up and let us get to know him in ways we really couldn't get to know him when he was playing.
Yeah, I'm also looking to hear what Paul has to say. He's, obviously we all know him well on the jump. He can say things that are crazy at times, so who knows what he'll say. But again, I'm looking forward to the eloquence of Chris Bosh, and I'm sure he will be eloquent. And, you know, the thing about Chris is this is a guy who had 11 NBA All-Star appearances. This is a guy who won multiple titles, won gold medals. And, really got so much taken away from him, because right when this position of center in the NBA was changing to where he could dominate, you could even argue that, you know, he was best years could have been ahead. He would still be, I think, playing today had he not had those unfortunate issues with blood clots. And he's always been a guy who makes you think when you talk to him. So I know he's been working on what he's going to say for a while, and I'm looking forward to hearing it.
I would echo those sentiments about Chris Bosh because, Brian, I was there with you in Miami during that time, and he's as honest as you get, right? Like, he was always going to tell you what it was like, good, bad, or indifferent. I felt like he was also the guy that, as a media member, I leaned on in those situations when it was tough. Not that those guys didn't all do a great job of facing the media day in and day out, especially that first year, which was really difficult. But the way his career was taken away from him, and I know he's talked about it on this show and many other platforms here on ESPN and elsewhere before, but you're right, Brian. Like, he revolutionized, I thought, the center position as well. And, man, he could have been a guy that would have lasted for a long time in his career because he became such a proficient three-point shooter from that position that he really opened up the game in a lot of ways. And I remember that All-Star game when he was taken off the floor and this all started, right? And really we saw the beginning of the end of his career. And it's such a unique story that I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say. So, but speaking of that Hall of Fame class, moments ago, Chris Webber had this to say about being a Hall of Famer.
Long overdue. I think you should have been here a while ago, but you did make it finally. When you got those words that you were in the Hall of Fame, how did that hit you?
I'm going to be honest, Mark. It still hasn't hit me. I'm enjoying it through the enjoyment of my father, my family, friends, seeing, so many basketball heroes here. But it's still something. I don't know when I'm going to finish digesting or processing this. It's the best feeling that I've had, I can tell you that. But I still think I'm discovering more every day with this great honor.
Shout out to our guy Mark Spears, the MC there. Let's put the spotlight on a soon-to-be Hall of Famer and Chris Bosh as we run it back here. Top career plays first, honorable mention, because Joey Crawford didn't give him continuation. But look at that reverse there. Ooh, nice job there, CB. That's CB4, Toronto did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Number 5, 2003, dunks on Theo Ratliff. Hello. Oh, man. That is a young CB there.
Love those purple unis.
Number 4. We'll move on to that. 2007, steals the pass. And then takes it from three quarters court and nails it.
Steph Curry before Steph Curry.
Exactly. The power forward Steph Curry. There you go, Cass. And a swish, too, to boot. Number 3, 2011, entering the Heatles era and packs it on the Bobcats.
Oh.
And of course, the pose.
That is a classic Bosh face right there.
Bosh at the elbow, as dangerous as there was. Whether he was shooting it, as you saw, they ran out on him, or taking it to the hole. 2013, here's number 2, saves the day in game 6. Sorry, Danny Green. Excellent block there. And that closed out game 6. That was after the Ray Allen shot, obviously. Huge moment.
Yeah, Gundy said that this would have been a foul if it was in regulation.
I don't know about that, Jeff.
I don't know about that.
Stop hating, Jeff. Number 1, 2013, hits the game winner against Portland. I remember this one. Ray Allen with the pass, Bosh with the 3, and then the celebration. Here comes LeBron in street clothes.
And glasses.
Actually, my bad. It was D-Wade with the assist there. I thought it was Ray. Look at that. So, Cass, how will you remember Chris's career?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind is Game 6 of the 2013 Finals. Ray Allen gets so much credit for that corner 3 to force overtime and yelling, get those ropes off the court. But it was Chris Bosh's offensive rebound. Now, I know Tim Duncan on the bench, but to find Ray Allen, Bosh was the reason that shot was even possible. And then in overtime, he had a few key buckets and 2 big blocks. Not just the block on Danny Green, but the one on Tony Parker. So that is the game that when I'm asked, how will you remember Chris Bosh's career, that game pops in my head. And I also think there's so much conversation about how much sacrifice that Dwayne Wade had to make on the Heat. And I think, you know, I don't think Chris Bosh gets enough credit for the sacrifices he made on that team. And finally, I hate that I have to think that I think about this when we're talking about Chris Bosh's career, but you guys talked about it. You know, he's 37, the youngest member in being inducted this year, and one of the youngest members to be inducted into the Hall of Fame in NBA history. There's a lot of what-ifs surrounding Chris Bosh, and I think, unfortunately, that defines a bit of his career.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Eric Spoelstra always said, and Brian, you'll remember this, he said, you know, he was the most important player of that group with those three guys because he had to make the biggest sacrifice for sure. So shout-out to Chris and all the Hall of Famers, obviously, this weekend. We'll be watching. So the Rockets tweeted out this scenario. You're offered $10 million to score in the paint against prime Hakeem Olajuwon in a game of one-on-one, and you get 10 chances. However, if you fail, you won't be able to use your phone ever again. So Cass, how do you approach this challenge?
This is peak off-season, isn't it? I saw Kevin Porter Jr. on Instagram called that easy money in the comments. Robert Horry said yes if he was in his prime. 10 tries for a professional NBA player, I think you take that bet. Little old me, who peaked in middle school, I would be communicating through smoke signals if I took that bet.
You know, Cass, you just got to, like, pull some sort of trick. Like, you know, nutmeg him or something like that. But in the paint, I'm not scoring. My only hope is to back him out. But it said in the paint, so I have to go through these contrived rules. But I saw somebody said...
Fun guy, what's up, baby?
What it do, baby?
Make, miss. It's a make or miss league, baby. That's it.
Make statements. Chris Webber told The Athletic that Allen Iverson is the most athletic person he's ever seen. Cass, do you agree?
I think when it comes to the discussion of the best athlete, especially if he was referring to across sports, I think it's a personal preference. I have no issue with people going with Jordan or Brady or Phelps or Serena. I think that's flexible. But in my definition, a best athlete, maybe in the NBA, a guy like Vince Carter comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Chris Webber hasn't seen Russell Westbrook. That's tragic. He should try to correct that because that's the best athlete I've ever seen. But hey, to each his own. And look, I'm never going to be surprised when a player supports a teammate. He was AI's teammate in Philly, so why shouldn't he back his guy?
Listen, I agree with you on Westbrook, pure athleticism perhaps, but AI also a great footballer in the state of Virginia in high school. Miss complacency.
I'll bet Westbrook could have been good too.
Yeah, he might have. There's an MVP right there. His summer, he was riding horse carriages this summer in Eastern Europe. Now he looks like he's in the best shape of his life. Brian, is it scary to think that Jokic isn't even in his prime yet?
You know, I saw the recent photos of him where he looks, you know, pretty svelte. And you're like, wow, you know, he had really, really wanted to take the summer off to rest, but he didn't rest. He continued to work. And, you know, there's a new energy drink in Serbia, a Jokic energy drink, and it says no sleep on it. And I don't know if Jokic has slept because I think he's been working out all summer. So, hey, the Nuggets are too low on some of these odds. Maybe it's a sneaky pick with Jamal Murray coming back at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, his passing ability, not just as a big, is thrilling. And I think he's a threat and a great addition to this new crop of superstars finding their own way.
Denver in the Western Conference Finals. Book it. Make boosties. Check out Stanford freshman Kiki Elrafian dunking here with ease. So, Cassidy, are you hopping on the Kiki bandwagon?
I mean, you need to underline the ease at which she is dunking that basketball. I know Chinna Adumike and Ramona Shelburne are somewhere beaming knowing she's playing for Stanford this season. The women's game is evolving. People continue, and it continues to evolve, so keep up.
All right.
You know what? She could score and Hakeem Olajuwon.
She could. That's fair. No doubt. All right. Well, look, man, I'm on the Kiki bandwagon as we speak right now. So, hey, coming up next, we're going to talk to Tim Bontemps, the latest on the Ben Simmons saga. Man, it is ongoing, but Tim has got all the goods. We'll have that for you in just a moment. Stick around here on The Jump.
Simmons, it cleared out for him.
spins out Gallinari, gives it up. Oh, he was right there.
The turning point was just, you know, we had an open shot, and you know, we missed. We made one free throw.
Boy, Simmons, uncontested, had a layup, but he leaves it for Thybulle.
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now.
That game and presser was a pivotal point in the future of the Sixers. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, now joined by ESPN NBA reporter Tim Bontemps, who reported recently with Bobby Marks on ESPN.com how we got to this point. So, Tim, man, how did this communication between Simmons and everyone break down here after that Hawks game?
Well, George, you really have to go back to that montage you just showed to really get to where we are today. And not only Ben Simmons passing up that dunk, but Joel Embiid and Doc Rivers kind of casting doubt on his future with the team. And in the wake of that game, the Sixers and Ben Simmons and his group met and decided it would be best for everybody to try to find a new home for Ben Simmons and to allow the Sixers to move forward with a team that can still be a championship quality team while also getting Ben somewhere else where he can have a fresh start to his career. But the problem is the Sixers see Ben Simmons for what he is, as a 25-year-old, three-time All-Star with 4 years left on his contract. That's a really valuable player and a really important trade asset for a team that's way over the salary cap and has no other ways to improve. But in talking to teams and trying to make a deal for Ben, Philadelphia has not been able to get a trade that's commensurate with that value, especially when you factor in the fact that guys like Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal, the kinds of stars that the Sixers would love to trade Ben Simmons for in a deal like that, aren't available. So last month, owner Josh Harris, Daryl Morey, Doc Rivers go to L.A., meet with Ben Simmons and his agent Rich Paul and say, hey, look, let's try to reset things, go into the season, have a good year, win a bunch of games and see if we can't do a deal later when something materializes. And the Ben Simmons side of things said, hey, look, we want to be traded now. We don't think we need to play ball and try to lift our trade value. Ben Simmons is a really talented player. He's under contract. Go find a deal. Let's get this started now. And if you're not going to trade me, I'm not going to show up to training camp in a couple weeks. And really, until we get to September 27th, I think that's where this is going to stay. And we'll see if Ben Simmons decides to not come to training camp and kind of take this to the next level. And at that point, how Philadelphia handles what will be a huge daily story in a city with plenty of media like Philadelphia, and whether they decide that ultimately they need to make a trade that they don't want to make, or if they get an offer that they feel is commensurate with the value for him that so far hasn't materialized.
Okay, so let me ask you a follow-up here as far as that particular aspect of it, the value. Are the Sixers looking at this? You said, of course, they would want a Bradley Beal or a Damian Lillard. Who wouldn't? But that's not what's out there at this particular moment because those two players aren't necessarily available on top of all that. So are they shooting too high considering the current marketplace? Not that I'm saying that Ben Simmons doesn't deserve to be traded for a player like that. I'm just saying because what's available isn't that. Are they shooting too high?
Well, if they're trying to trade Ben Simmons today, George, you would say the answer is yes, right? Because that offer isn't available. And what we know about Daryl Morey is he's not going to make a trade to just make a trade. So if they can't get Dame Lillard or Bradley Beal, if they trade Ben Simmons, they're going to get a package back that will allow them to later make a trade for a guy like Dame Lillard or Bradley Beal or some player of that caliber. And I think that's where the problem is. Philadelphia is a team that's trying to win right now. They have Joel Embiid, who's one of the best players in the league. They can't turn Ben Simmons into some draft picks and hope they can turn him into something later, right? They have to get stuff that's really good right now for a guy like him, which only adds to the complexity here. So yeah, look, if they want to trade him today, George, you're right. They're asking for too much based on what's out there. But I think if you ask the Sixers, they would say this guy's under contract for four more years. He's a 25-year-old all-star. Why do we have to trade him right now?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game of chicken, to say the least. All right, as we look at all the moves around the league this season, there have been a lot of teams, made a lot of different roster moves. Which team to you stands out the most as far as their scope, right, where they can be super high on one end and super low on the other end?
Well, George, there's one obvious answer for that, and that's the Golden State Warriors. You look at this team. You've got Klay Thompson, who's missed the last 2 years, first with a torn ACL, then a torn Achilles. He's probably going to be out until sometime around Christmas. That means he's going to miss 30 games. When he comes back, what is he going to look like? How much is he going to be able to play? Can he be anywhere near the guy he was before? Then on top of that, you've got James Wiseman coming off a disappointing rookie year. You've got two lottery picks in Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody. Can those guys step in right now and be contributors on a winning team? Or can the Warriors turn them into a star player to add to their core going forward? And then on top of that, you've just got the health of Steph Curry, who was an MVP caliber player last year, but is in his mid-30s and has had injury issues in the past. And if he misses any time at all, their offense is going to go off a cliff. So if you told me Golden State makes the conference finals or even the finals if they make a trade for a star, I wouldn't be surprised. If you tell me they have injuries and they miss the playoffs or in the play-in tournament and maybe miss the playoffs again, I wouldn't be surprised. So when you look at that kind of range of outcomes, I don't think there's anybody else in the league that comes close to that complete uncertainty about their roster. It's why I'm really fascinated to see what they look like this season.
Tim Bontemps does a phenomenal job covering the NBA for us. Thank you, brother. Good to see your face. See you soon.
Great to see you, man.
All right. Take care. All right. We mentioned earlier that Marc Gasol is being moved. He is no longer a Los Angeles Laker. And, of course, you look at former Brooklyn center DeAndre Jordan now is a member of the Lakers and was introduced yesterday. Here's what he said when asked about his relationship with the Nets big three.
We're definitely not friends anymore. So, no, I'm joking. We're friends before basketball, after basketball, and I think ultimately we all just want to be happy. And, you know, being able to compete is something that is very important to me, and they understand that. And we're brothers beyond basketball. So, you know, us being teammates or not isn't going to reflect or affect our relationship.
All right, here's a look at all the new acquisitions on both squads. So Brian and Cass are back here. Brian, which team improved the most this summer?
First off, DeAndre is always going to love KD and Kyrie because they sacrificed money in their contracts when they signed with the Nets to get him the $40 million guaranteed. So, yeah, he's a brother for a really long time. if both of these teams are fully healthy, and boy, is that a loaded if, because you got a lot of health injury, health history there and a lot of age. You lot of like the team that has the three superstars. Now, LeBron and AD, when they are full power, have still not been beaten. And I'm sure that's something that will be repeated sometimes this year. So I don't want to disrespect them at all. But the Nets top end with those three guys at full power is the best in the league. And really, this season, in a lot of ways, is an examination of whether those guys can stay healthy and stay together and stay focused. Because if they do, I don't think anybody's beaten them 4 out of 7, including the Lakers.
Look, I think there are less questions about the Nets roster, and jokes aside, when it comes to the Lakers' age, it's safe to say that there's not one team in the NBA that has the same experience that the Lakers have on their team. And that experience is not only helpful in the postseason, but it also gives them an understanding on how to approach the regular season to be prepared for the postseason, led by LeBron James, who probably understands that better than any player in the league. So I still lean towards to Wendy's point that the three-headed monster with the Nets and some of their, you know, role players who really stepped up big last year, to me, you know, face value, that is the better roster construction. But I don't think that the Lakers should be a punchline in any regards when it comes to the experience that they have on their team.
See, I would still take a slight lean towards the Lakers in this situation. And look, I think we're splitting hairs here between these two particular teams. That's my personal opinion. But I think that where I lean towards the Lakers is this. Number one, the last time LeBron James had a layoff this long, it resulted in a championship. The other thing is Anthony Davis. To me, Anthony Davis is the cheat code when it comes to all this stuff with any team, really, because when you play him at the five and he is engaged and he is healthy, I just don't think there's anyone in the league that can guard him. I don't even know if Giannis could potentially do it, to be frank.
But when you play him at the five is the key.
Right, but he has. I think it was last season before the injury. He was playing about almost 60% of the time there. So they were rolling until Anthony Davis got hurt. So I feel fairly confident that if healthy, to Brian's caveat, which is a huge if with both these teams, that I would still take a slight lean towards the Lakers. All right, coming up, Mark Spears takes us through a journey of an impending Hall of Famer, Ben Wallace, from a small town in Alabama to the top of the basketball world.
Could you do right now, cold?
Oh, man, that's tough. I don't want to say a crazy number because then people are going to be like, oh, no, he's lying, you know. But then I can't say a low number because then it's like, wow, you're a professional athlete. Right. So I'm going to go with, let's say, 50. I think that's a solid number.
That was DeAndre Jordan on my radio show, Sedano and Kappa, on 710 ESPN here in L.A. yesterday. Cass, 50 push-ups for DeAndre?
I mean, what are we thinking? That's low?
I thought it was low.
That's high?
That was my reaction. I thought I could do 30 right now, good form, cold, and I'm 43 years old, 44,
that's the key,
and in no shape.
That's the form. That's the key, though. I mean, me personally, I'm knees down, push-ups. I'm sorry, and I'm not even, you know, but. Is it wide armed or is it close to the chest arm?
Chest down. Chest down.
Regardless. 50, he didn't want to give a number that was too high. I respect it.
George, I'm
Sunday on ABC, Tina Charles and the Mystics continue their push for a playoff berth as they face Candace Parker in the Sky at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ABC and the ESPN app. Saturday, Ben Wallace will have the distinguished honor of being the first undrafted player in 40 years to enter the Hall of Fame. His journey to Springfield is unconventional in many ways. He got his start playing at a junior college and at a Division II HBCU. That road ultimately led to his hometown of Whitehall, Lowndes County, Alabama. The undefeated's Mark Spears has more here.
And now, the Detroit Piston legend. He is the 6'9 man of steel who imposed his will in the NBA.
Watch by Ben Wallace.
You know him as an NBA champion, a four-time All-Star and Defensive Player of the Year, taking the unconventional path as a small-town Alabama kid. He beat the greatest of odds to make the 2021 show. The class of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, Ben Wallace.
Hall of Fame never came across the radar. Saying that you was one of the best players to ever play here, you can't prepare for that. Coming from where I come from, you just don't make it out of there. Always talk about being in love with the struggle, because every day was a struggle. Making it to the NBA was like an ultimate goal. That journey is what kept me alive.
Ben Wallace was born in 1974. The 10th of 11 kids from Lowndes County, Alabama. He grew up in Whitehall, a small town named after an old slave plantation. The picturesque landscape cannot hide the remnants of the past.
It's a poor area, a lot of farmland. You can tell, like, this area was heavily populated by slaves. Some of the stuff is still there. It still reeks of slavery. I can just walk down the street and see old log cabinet just sitting off in the cut. Like, I know what that was. You know, I know growing up as a kid, you ain't supposed to notice those things. But as a kid, I noticed them. I noticed them right away. Well, the average kid, parents might go to the grocery store. My mom might go to the store and come back with a box of 12-gauge shells. You know, go get something. And we go hit the woods. Come back with some rabbits, some squirrels, some deer, whatever. Eat off the land.
Poverty affected all areas of Wallace's life. In grade school, he once had to go barefoot when he outgrew his old shoes.
For me to actually have to walk to school bare feet, I'm like, is anybody listening? Is anybody looking at this? Is anybody paying any attention to what is going on in our community?
Lowndes County resides in the heart of the Black Belt, known for plantations where slaves were forced to pick cotton. Even in modern times, Ben says working those fields is considered a rite of passage for Black people in the community.
I was looking at the dead-end jobs that everybody else was working. I was working on that farm.
What kind of farm was it?
Cotton. Worked in a cotton field.
You pick cotton?
Pick cotton, bale hay. I don't want to say it was slavery, but it was the closest thing to being a slave that could have happened in the 90s in this country. My mindset was set from a young age. That this ain't for me. This ain't the life I want to live.
Wallace used basketball as his ticket out, playing in JUCO and transferring to Division II HBCU, Virginia Union.
I was starting to take life serious, not just sports, not just going to school, but my life, period. So when I got out of Lowndes County, that was it. I was like, Lowndes County, y'all made me too hungry. Y'all made me too strong.
Welcome to the 1996 NBA Draft.
When Wallace wasn't selected in a star-studded draft, the Bullets took a chance by signing him. After short stints in Washington and Orlando, Big Ben became an elite defender in Detroit.
Oh, what a block by Wallace!
In 2004, Wallace achieved the ultimate dream, winning an NBA championship.
What was going across my mind was, they're not going to believe when I tell them this in Lowndes County. One of us escape off this plantation and actually did something that the world is taking notice of. It's bigger than me. It's so much bigger than me. I was motivated so much by my community. The route that I went is a direct reflection of what I'm labeled as a Hall of Famer. I always talk about being in love with the struggle. If you're in love with the struggle, you find out a way to survive. People ask me what I say to the next Ben Wallace. I wouldn't say nothing to the next Ben Wallace. I'd say something to the people. I hope y'all recognize him when you see him. And hopefully you won't have to take the route that I had to take.
Ben Wallace!
Man, I remember those days in Detroit. Big Ben won 4 Defensive Player of the Year awards while locking down the paint in Detroit, tied with fellow Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo for most in NBA history. Wallace was also first team all defense 5 times and made 5 all NBA teams. Here's more from Wallace earlier today.
Strength is what life is all about. We look around at everybody else. We look at everybody else's strength. We want that. Can you deal with their weakness? If you want to be Ben Wallace,
got it.
You got a long way to go. You got a long way to go. I'm not a mute. I'm not slow. I'm not weak. I can strengthen up anything you put beside me. I work for mine. I cry for mine. I bleed for mine. I crawl for mine.
That's real right there, for sure. Coming up, after their first playoff berth in 8 years, can the Knicks finish above 500 again this upcoming season? We've got win totals, overs and unders are next here on The Jump. Here's the weekend lineup on the ESPN family of networks and the ESPN app. The U.S. Open Women's Final is Saturday on ABC. On ESPN. On ABC Saturday night, Washington visits the Big House to take on Michigan. The U.S. Open Men's Final is on Sunday on ESPN. And week 1 of Monday Night Football is Ravens at Raiders in Vegas. That's on ESPN, ABC as well. And Peyton and Eli are on ESPN 2, while ESPN Plus has even more options for you. With 39 days left until opening night in the NBA, let's continue with our over-under win total segment here, courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook. Cassidy, with the additions of DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, can we expect the Bulls' win total to be over or under 42.5? And feel free to be as homerific as you'd like.
Woo! So they haven't won 43 games since the 2014-2015 season, where DeRozan and most improved Jimmy Butler lost in the conference semis. AK made these moves to be relevant again, like those D-Rose teams. So the Bulls fan in me says, over, let's go. I know Wendy is all in on Zach LaVine this season, so I hope he's saying over too.
Yeah, the key is Zach LaVine going to be all in on the Bulls? That's the big question. And then what Zach LaVine believes is I'd like to have Zach LaVine answer this one. So what this really is, this is the bookmakers are saying that the Bulls are going to be a lot better. They won 31 of the 72 games last year, so this is a pretty big bump. But it's also them saying that they don't trust their defense, because this is essentially a 500 record. And, you know, considering the additions that they made, 500 is not what they're looking for. It's also a nod to what they think will be a lot of parity in the Eastern Conference this year. There's really only 3 teams in my mind, Orlando, Cleveland, Detroit, who really don't start the season with a chance to make the playoffs, and Cleveland would probably argue with that. So there's going to be some parity, and they're going to take some losses. But, you know, I'm inclined to go over, but I wouldn't bet on it, I'll tell you that, just because I don't trust their defense.
Well, I'm with you. I'm going to go over, too, but very slightly over, because I don't trust that defense. I know Lonzo's good defensively, but I don't really trust that defense out there with that particular group. So I think Billy Donovan will struggle a little bit there as well. So, all right, coming off their first playoff berth since 2013, where streamers came down from the rafters, Brian will remember, as they won 1 game against LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. The Knicks win total this year is set at 41.5. So, B, what do you got, over or under?
This is a surprising line. The Knicks won 41 out of the 72 games last season. So right. They're basically saying the Knicks are going to be 10 games worse, which is a surprise, because in my mind, they've upgraded their talent, with Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker. Now, you may say that the Knicks maybe got on the right side of circumstances last year and maybe finished a little higher than they would have if everything was as normal, and I would agree with that. But the one thing when you look at when the Knicks, and we're talking about an over and under bet here, I know that they're going to play hard every night under Tom Thibodeau. I don't know if we're going to see the Nets and Lakers with all of their veteran players who are going to take nights off. I can't say for sure whether teams like that are going to do it every night, and you know, guessing their wins is difficult. But I know Tibbs is going to play to win every night. And because of that, and because I do believe they added some talent, even if Julius Randle comes back to the pack from his career year last year, and even if we don't see the Knicks win quite as many games by sneaking up on people, I still think they're going to be a winning team, and I still think they're going to be a playoff team. And so a vote for an over here is a vote for Tibbs, and I'm prepared to make it.
Wow. Cass?
I mean, that over-under number, to Brian's point, is petty to me. I mean, half a game over their win total from last year, and it was a 72-game season. To Wendy's point, I feel they added solid pieces. I see their core young guys of Randall, Barrett, and Quickly. They'll continue to improve. I don't think you can underestimate that playoff experience, but Mitchell Robinson could be the biggest boost if he's healthy, and that's a big if.
All right, I'm going to go slightly over as well, but I don't think it's much more than 41.5. I do think they regress some. Shout out to our boy Tom Haberstroh, who used to always say regression to the mean. I think there'll be some of that. I think they were a little healthier than I had anticipated them being last year outside of Mitchell Robinson. So I think that they'll be a little better. But I don't think they're going to be that much better. I think that the rest of the East has gotten better. I think that also factors into this equation, too. The East is no longer the least
good. Good luck at the betting window, George, with the slightly over. I'd like to slightly make this bet.
Okay. Well, yes. I won't bet it. That's my point, though, on a slightly over. Thanks to Tim.
I might actually get to betting.
Thanks to Cass. Thanks to Brian. The Jump is back on Monday on ESPN2. NFL Live is up next. You guys have a great weekend. See ya.